British are coming.
The time is now at hand which must probably determine whether Americans are to be free men or slaves, whether they are to have any property they can call their own, whether their houses and farms are to be pillaged and destroyed, and they consigned to a state of wretchedness from which no human efforts will probably deliver them. The fate of unborn millions will now depend, under God, on the courage and conduct of this army. Our cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us no choice but a brave resistance or the most abject submission. This is all we can expect. We have therefore to resolve to conquer or die. Our country's honor all call upon us for a vigorous and manly exertion. And if we shamefully fail, we shall become infamous to the whole world. Let us therefore rely upon the goodness of our cause and the aid of the supreme being in whose hands victory is, to animate and encourage us to great and noble actions. The eyes of all our countrymen are now upon us, and we shall have their blessings and praises if happily we are the instruments of saving them from the tyranny meditated against them. Let us therefore animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a freeman contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth. George Washington, July 2nd, 1776. Many will whisper about how all of this sounds so good and is very idealistic, etc. But try making that argument in front of a judge. That, my friends, is exactly the point. Exercise of a creator-endowed right requires no prior permission from any officer of the king's government. When we exercise that which is clearly granted by our creator and protected by our constitution, we are within our right and can cause no harm to any of our fellows. If the king and his agents in government leave us alone in these matters, which is truly our desire, then by our actions, we establish again those rights for ourselves and become the instrument by which it is transmitted to our children and to all others who will receive it. However, if they seek to deprive us of those rights and bind us to their will, it is they who act presumptuously and outside of the law, both man's and God's. Should we then expect that those who follow this course shall go unmolested in the free exercise of said rights? Absolutely not. The modern tyranny which has so cleverly enslaved this nation will no more readily release us from bondage than Pharaoh was willing to release the enslaved Israelites, or that the King of England was willing to release the upstart American colonists, and for much the same reasons. We are their wealth, their property, their merchandise, and their power. Without us as slaves, they are nothing. As they have proven before, they will tolerate many things and make concessions when necessary to placate they who would oppose them, but they will not, cannot allow any to survive outside of their stranglehold. They must crush any who partake in any such activity, and in the cruelest of manners, as a warning to others who might follow. Consider the previously mentioned case of Randy Weaver from Idaho, and the nearly 100 murdered men, women, and children from Mount Carmel outside of Waco, Texas, whose only crime was that they had sustained themselves and recognized their creator and exercised their rights. No government agent or agency was ever prosecuted in those deaths. The message was and is quite clear.
Standing in this same place a third of a century ago, Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation ravaged by depression, gripped in fear. He could say, in surveying the nation's troubles, they concern, thank God, only material things. Our crisis today is in reverse. We find ourselves rich in goods, but ragged in spirit, reaching with magnificent precision for the moon, but falling into raucous discord on earth. We are caught in war wanting peace. We're torn by division wanting unity. We see around us empty lives wanting fulfillment. We see tasks that need doing, waiting for hands to do them. To a crisis of the spirit, we need an answer of the spirit. And to find that answer, we need only look within ourselves. When we listen to the better angels of our nature, we find that they celebrate the simple things, the basic things, such as goodness, decency, love, kindness. Greatness comes in simple trappings. The simple things are the ones most needed today if we are to surmount what divides us and cement what unites us. To lower our voices would be a simple thing. In these difficult years, America has suffered from a fever of words, from inflated rhetoric that promises more than it can deliver, from angry rhetoric that fans discontents into hatreds, from bombastic rhetoric that postures instead of persuading. We cannot learn from one another until we stop shouting at one another, until we speak quietly enough so that our words can be heard as well as our voices.
Richard Nixon, Washington, D.C., January 20th, 1961. These things and worse will befall many who oppose the king and his court by exercising their rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness without permission. Those who search for popular support from the general public shall be sorely disappointed.
The time has come when those of us who believe in an independent American destiny must band together and organize for strength. We have been led toward globalization by a minority of our people. This minority has power. It has influence. It has a loud voice. But it does not represent the American people.
Charles A. Lindbergh, New York City, April 23rd, 1941. We pose the question, how can we prevail? Having little expectation of remaining unmolested and no hope of wide public support, what hope have we of prevailing in these matters? Are we to take this course of action and expect to fail? Absolutely not. If we still lack confidence, it is because as yet, we're not yet actually committed to the principle of creator-endowed unalienable rights. We still want to rely on the system or political process or even hope for some courtroom theatrics from a Johnny Cochran-type attorney or even the ultimate force of our own arms to prevail, none of which can inspire confidence. But when we have attained a good and clear understanding of these things, and have finally committed ourselves to standing on the principle of creator-endowed unalienable rights, we understand that our true strength comes from the very source of these rights, the Creator Himself. We must now be willing to stand as firmly as humanly possible while appealing to that Creator for the rightness of our stand, our defense and success in these endeavors, and must fully expect to prevail upon that basis. And also, we must prepare ourselves mentally, materially, and most importantly, spiritually, for the calamity which appears to be unavoidable. For when it comes, we must be willing and prepared to play the proper part. But all confidence for success must be placed in the hands of the Creator, the Grantor, and Guarantor of those precious rights which are the subject of said American crisis.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world.
John F. Kennedy, Washington, D.C., January 1961. For those not yet knowing their Creator and may doubt the effectiveness of such an appeal, consider once again the historical accuracy of such an appeal to the Creator God for preservation of life and right at the formation of our nation. In our Declaration of Independence, our forefathers included these words: "We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Consider that under the laws of England, which claimed jurisdiction over these men, at the time, this was an illegal act. For those who supported this declaration, from that moment on, were under a death sentence from the king, and each would have been hung for treason if captured. But from history, we know that their appeal to the Supreme Judge of the world and their firm reliance on the protection of divine providence were not misplaced, for the pre-revisionist history of our nation records the success of their efforts, the peace and prosperity that we enjoy to this very day are the result of that appeal made by those men so long ago. Still not convinced? As Thomas Paine observed,
God Almighty will not give up a people to military destruction or leave them unsupportedly to perish, who have so earnestly and so repeatedly sought to avoid the calamities of war by every decent method which wisdom could prevent. Neither have I so much of the infidel in me as to suppose that he has relinquished the government of the world and given us up to the care of devils. If we believe the power of hell to be limited, we must likewise believe that their agents are under some providential control.
Events proved Paine's observations to be correct. In order to understand that the loss of liberties is part of a global plan, let us briefly look at history from the other side of the ocean, specifically at the turn of the 13th century. During this period lived one of the greatest heroes of Scottish history, Sir William Wallace, who led a rebellion against the King of England, which was eventually successful, partly as a result of his own death. Wallace's life was portrayed in the film Braveheart, a somewhat fictionalized account of his life, wherein he is depicted as reproving the princes and nobles of Scotland for seeking terms of peace, as well as title to lands from the King of England by saying,
"You've traded your God-given rights for something less."
While this scene may not be historically correct, it does express the sentiment which drove Wallace and his followers. His battle cry was said to be,
"God arms the patriot."
And the basis claimed by the Scots for their freedom was that of creator-endowed rights. In this account of his life, Wallace, when captured by the king and charged with treason, his only defense was the very same one of consent. He claimed that he could not be guilty of treason against the king because he had never sworn allegiance to said king. If these ideas of creator-endowed unalienable rights are a puzzlement to you, then you must remove the cause of said puzzlement. This must be understood, not simply a thing to believe in like a religious teaching. It is real and reliable and must become your guiding light, not some distant point of reference. To accomplish this will require both the making up of your educational deficiency and the making of peace with that creator, and on his terms. Each will require dedicated individual effort, much thought, prayer, and the rethinking of many things which you thought you knew. As for making peace with the creator, this may seem awkward to those not having previously acknowledged him, and for many who have. But set your heart and mind with humility and a sincerity suitable for approach to God and seek his guidance. You have the assurance that if you seek, you will find him. Prepare for his response and be willing to act upon it. This God is to be found in the history of the matters with which we now must do. Look to the history of nations and their peoples. Look to the writings of the men who shared in the founding of this nation, for they seem to have known the Creator far better than modern-day religionists. Be convinced that they appealed to the God of that Christian Bible and then read that Bible, as you should and must. Ignore what men have told you is in the Word. Read it for yourself from beginning to end. Time is very short, my friends, and this is a big book. So it is time to begin. There are things within that will be difficult to comprehend at first. Do not become overly concerned. Read and study the history of lands and peoples. You'll find that the Christian Bible deals with the matters of justice, the government of men, and the relationship of the Creator to all, with almost no mention of the word religion. You will find the source of right, the principles of good government, and that knowledge which so emboldened our forefathers. There is no intent to offend in this commentary, and nor do I extend an apology. There is only one Creator God who can and does reveal himself in the affairs of men. and because of that singular fact, an appeal to any other is ineffectual. The religious-based prejudices and political politeness which we have learned in the King's schools and churches only keep us from the proper acknowledgement of that Creator. If we cannot or will not come to or name the Creator to whom we appeal, how can we have the confidence of His support? I share with you now an open letter addressed to the preachers all over America, God's good shepherds. You, the churches in America, are part of the problem and not the solution to the moral decay and demise of this once Christian nation. Apathy, passiveness, and compromise have been preached from your pulpits. If you will not fight evil, then you are part of the evil. You have compromised by incorporating your churches under the IRS 501c3. Thus, God is not sovereign in your churches. This tyrannical, atheistic, socialistic government is, and you have elected to go to bed with prostitutes, dictators, and the devil himself. You cannot come out smelling like a rose whilst you lay down in manure. You have been lied to and been deceived by the religious colleges which you have attended and are totally ignorant as to the true meaning of Romans 13. God is nowhere near your church, and you are leading your flock straight to the gates of hell. Many of you are committing acts of treason because, although knowing the truth, refuse to tell your people. You are ignorant, arrogant, and disobedient to God by not preaching His word, the truth. There will be no place for Christians nor their churches in this new world order which we are being plunged into. The United Nations is an antichrist, one-world government promoting a one-world religion. Guess what? It won't be Christianity. Jesus was an activist, a right-wing radical, a non-compromising, persecuted rebel, and you are none of the above. You fear your own shadow and would trade your freedom for safety. You deserve neither freedom nor safety. Don't the prophecies nor world history tell you what is about to happen to this nation? Wake up, you damnable fools! Wake up and get out of bed now and begin teaching the whole word of the Bible. The Bible is no buffet table enabling you to preach only what the government says is politically correct. You preach only what makes your sheeple feel warm and fuzzy. You preach that which will not paint you a rebel. You need to preach the truth, which is the whole word of God. It's time to take the lace off your underwear and learn to preach the Bible. It's time to get off the fluoride in the water that's been softening your brain. It's time to save some souls by telling your flock of the reality of things to come. Yes, many of you fit into this category, but we will not be silenced. We will bring the truth to your people with or without your help. So help us, God. Dick Bova, Christian Patriot, 1997.
Let us go. So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the red we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave? O'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
We had our American Revolution over 2 centuries ago, and the years have done something to it. The legends remain, and the statues, and the grassy earthworks, and the great body of tradition, but a good deal of the reality has been filtered out, revised. When we look back to see Washington crossing the Delaware on a cold winter night, or kneeling in prayer in the snow of Valley Forge, we see the Minutemen, or a lanky Virginian rifleman, picturesque in fringed buckskin. But somehow, it all seems out of a pageant, and neither Washington nor the men who followed him quite come alive for us. This is a pity, because the central reality in this great act that brought a nation to its birth was the living, aspiring, struggling people who were immediately involved in it. A romantic haze has settled down over the whole affair. When we look through it, the facts tend to be a little blurred. And what is most worth remembering, the one thing that so often escapes us, the fact that like all of history's wars, the war of the American Revolution was a hard, wearing, bloody, and tragic business, a struggle to the death that we came very close to losing. It was a struggle, furthermore, was fought out by people very much like ourselves, which is to say that they were often confused, usually divided in sentiment, and now and then rather badly discouraged about the possible outcome of the tremendous task they had undertaken. It comes as a shock to realize just how many Americans in 1775 were actually opposed to independence and a break with King George III. A good many historians believe that no more than a third of the provincials were active patriots, and they estimate that another third were loyalists, with the remaining third uncommitted. To continue, it is clear that a good many of the people who believed in independence were not always willing to fight for it. When the war began, the colonies contained about 2.5 million men, women, and children, a population which should have yielded some 700,000 men capable of bearing arms. Yet in 1780, only 1 year before the crucial battle at Yorktown, the Continental Army and the state militia together contained no more than 1/16th of the country's available manpower. But all of this says nothing more than the people of the revolutionary period were extremely human. Enough of them, in the end, were willing to fight and die for what they believed in to make the dream of independence and freedom come true. And we who look back at them owe a debt of whose size is almost beyond our comprehension. They did not have an easy time of it, and if they got confused and discouraged now and then, it is not to be wondered at. For behind the great struggle with the professional armies of Great Britain, there was the unending struggle between patriot and loyalist, a civil war just as real and as bitter as the one which broke out nearly a century later. And although the principal battles were decided along the eastern seaboard, the fighting on the frontiers along the rim of American civilization was, if anything, even more violent and continued in many areas long after the peace treaty with England was signed. Sometimes it is hard to see how Americans could have won if the Revolution had not turned into a world war, that is, if France had not intervened in the wake of the surrender of Burgoyne's army. And yet there was an unconquerable toughness at the core of the American effort. The farmers and shopkeepers of Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and the other colonies were hard men to beat. And they went quite a way on their own, without any help from anyone but themselves. They knew little about the European methods of warfare, and despite all the tales of frontier riflemen fighting Indian style from behind trees, most of the great revolutionary battles were fought according to the European style. We were poorly equipped, usually ill-fed, and almost certainly badly clothed. But fighting against the world's greatest power, they managed not only to hold off disaster, but usually gave a little better than they got. Somewhere, in the course of more than 6 bitter years of warfare, those Americans worked something out. They began to see, amidst the monotony, discomfort, acute danger, the suffering and constant campaigning, that they were somehow more than just soldiers of the separate colonies. Somewhere, through their efforts, because of their efforts, a nation was born. As South Carolina's Christopher Gadsden had urged before the fighting had started, they began to see that there ought to be no more New England men, no New Yorkers, but all of us, Americans. That came. And finally independence came, as it had to come once the vision had truly taken hold. Bruce Catton. In an address titled The Inspiration of the Declaration, President Calvin Coolidge spoke on July 5, 1926, to a Philadelphia audience about the origins and impact of the Declaration of Independence. I share with you now some excerpts from that speech. We meet to celebrate the birthday of America. The coming of a new life always excites our interest, although we know in the case of the individual that it has been an infinite repetition reaching back beyond our vision that only makes it more wonderful. But how our interest and wonder increase when we behold the miracle of the birth of a new nation. It is not here necessary to examine in detail the causes which led to the American Revolution. In their immediate occasion, they were largely economic. But the conviction is inescapable that a new civilization had come, a new spirit had arisen on this side of the Atlantic, more advanced and more developed in its regard for the rights of the individual than that which characterized the old world. There is something beyond the establishment of a new nation, great as that event would be, in the Declaration of Independence, which has ever since caused it to be regarded as one of the great charters that not only was to liberate America, but was everywhere to ennoble humanity. It is but natural that the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence should open with a reference to nature's God, and should close in the final paragraphs with an appeal to the supreme judge of the world and an assertion of a firm reliance on divine providence. No one can examine this record and escape the conclusion that in the great outline of its principles, the Declaration was the result of the religious teachings of the preceding period. The principles of human relationship which went into the Declaration of Independence are found in the texts, the sermons, and the writings of the early colonial clergy who were earnestly undertaking to instruct their congregations in the great mystery of how to live. They preached equality because they believed in the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. They justified freedom by the text that we are all created in the divine image, all partakers of the divine spirit. If this apprehension of the facts be correct, and the documentary evidence would appear to verify it, then certain conclusions are bound to follow. A spring will cease to flow if its source be dried up. A tree will wither if its roots be destroyed. In its main features, the Declaration of Independence is a great spiritual document. It is a declaration not of material, but of spiritual conceptions. Equality, liberty, popular sovereignty, the rights of man, these are not elements which we can see and touch. They are ideals. They have their source and their roots in the religious convictions. They belong to the unseen world. Unless the faith of the American people in these religious convictions is to endure, the principles of our Declaration will perish. We cannot continue to enjoy the result if we neglect and abandon the cause. We live in an age of science and of abounding accumulation of material things. These did not create our Declaration. Our Declaration created them. The things of the Spirit come first. Unless we cling to that, all our material prosperity, overwhelming though it may appear, will turn to a barren scepter in our grasp. If we are to maintain the great heritage which has been bequeathed to us, we must be like-minded as the fathers who created. We must not sink into a pagan materialism. We must cultivate the reverence which they had for the things that are holy. We must follow the spiritual and moral leadership which they showed. We must keep replenished, that they may glow with a more compelling flame the altar fires before which they worshipped.
Let them call me rebel, and welcome. I feel no concern for it, but I would suffer the misery of devils were I to make a whore of my soul by swearing allegiance to a government whose character is that of the deceitful, the greedy, abusive, and murderous men within it. I would also find horrid the thought of living in a peace purchased at the cost of agreement or compromise with such men, who at the last day shall be shrieking to the rocks and mountains to cover them, and fleeing in terror from the orphan, the widow, and the slain of America.
Thomas Paine, 1776. Any discussion of opposition to governmental tyranny must include an intelligent reference to arms. On one hand, they are the ultimate force employed by a government to suppress its opposition. However, the defense of one's person, family, and property is among our Creator-endowed rights and is a biblical principle that a strong man armed keepeth his house.
and his goods are in peace. We must think clearly as to the matter of arms. The continued efforts of the king to restrict our constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms is at the very heart of the reasons that we choose the course we do. There can be no mistaking the purposes of a government which fears arms in the hands of her people. The methods of all tyrants being similar, we once again turn to the words of Thomas Paine. There are persons, too, who see not the full extent of the evil which threatens them. They solace themselves with hopes that the enemy, if he succeed, will be merciful. It is the madness of folly to expect mercy from they who have refused to do justice, and even mercy, where conquest is the object, is only a trick of war. The cunning of the fox is as murderous as the violence of the wolf, and we ought to guard equally against both. The king's first objective is partly by threats and partly by promises, to terrify or seduce the people to deliver up their arms and receive mercy. Today, we can see the efforts to terrorize and seduce us for the same cause, but we shall see worse. One day, my friends, it shall seem a great liability to possess arms. But if you have them, never surrender them. If their simple possession is so worrisome to our adversaries, then their value is quite evident. But if social calamity or conflict arises, the value to their owners will be quite obvious to all. This is a creator-endowed right, recognized and protected by our Constitution, which must be exercised if it is to hold value. If we should so easily surrender this one, we then shall surrender all.
I ask no greater blessing than to share with you the common danger and common glory.
Samuel Adams, 1776. Must we then advocate armed actions to accomplish our cause? The answer to this question is quite clear. As William Cooper has stated, whoever fires the first shot will lose this war. The biblical principle states, whosoever shall live by the sword shall die by the sword. There were two swords mentioned, the first in the hands of the oppressor, the second in the hand of the oppressed. We must hold the second sword if conflict should arise. Paine once again describes the proper course in these matters.
Not all the treasures of the world, so far as I believe, could have induced me to support an offensive war, for I think it murder. But if a thief breaks into my house, burns and destroys my property, and kills or threatens to kill me or those that are in it, and to bind me in all cases whatsoever to his will, am I to suffer? What signifies it to me whether he who does it is a king or a common man, my countryman or not my countryman, whether it be done by an individual villain or an army of them? If we shall reason to the root of things, we shall find no difference. Neither can just cause be assigned why we should punish in the one case and pardon in the other.
Arms are an essential tool, necessary to the defense of one's security in peace or war, and should be used as required in that capacity. Never surrender them, my friends. We are called as a people to give testimony in the sight of the world to our faith that the future shall belong to the free. For history does not long entrust the care of freedom to the weak or the timid. Dwight Eisenhower, January 1953. Most would agree that our nation is in great peril. Many who consider themselves patriots have undertaken the task to prepare and defend themselves, their families, and their country on what basis and by what means each feels appropriate. However, there is no agreement on what means is best for all, and no clear, distinct, and unifying principle underlying that patriotism. There is, in fact, a general sense of hopelessness in this cause. My purpose in the telling of these things has been to present this concept of creator-endowed unalienable rights to good men and women who may not have previously considered such things. I hope that I have caused some to consider that this is not some silly, idealistic, or religious argument with little value. It is instead a great and right and clear principle, in fact, the only basis on which we can hope to prevail. This was and is the foundation of our nation, and as such must remain the foundation principle adopted by all who would call themselves patriot. All must agree that the unjust taking of individual rights by government is the primary cause and effect of this present crisis. But most can only see political or legal means of opposing such tyranny, neither of which have produced meaningful results. These constitute participation, and therefore our consent to be governed by the present tyranny. We must therefore realize that they represent a false hope for this nation and works only for the advancement of the present tyranny and keeps us removed from reliance upon the source of those rights, our Creator. We must reclaim and exercise those rights which have so craftily and subtly been taken from us, where there is no point to our stand. Free exercise of those rights generates great power and prosperity for the individual by having removed that power and wealth from our oppressors. No more effective strategy exists for this cause. For all who do these things, there is great risk. For some, there will be tremendous consequences. But for all, and for generations to come, there will be greatness accomplished. Each must know our risk and consider it lost as the price of admission to this conflict. We must be and remain clear of mind as to our reasons and purposes and be resolved to stay the course or not embark upon it at all. We must sever all allegiances to the king and settle all debts, for these are the chains of our bondage, and truly, no man can serve two masters. And finally, we must be at peace with our Creator God at all times, and all our confidence must be upon Him for our success, not each other, not our arms, not our own craftiness, and we must never compromise that position. Just as those men who opposed the first American tyranny did, may all who understand these things stand united in appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions and with a firm reliance on the real and present protection of divine providence, mutually pledged to each other, our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Ten days before the 50th anniversary of the signing of that historical document, and being in poor health, Thomas Jefferson was forced to decline an invitation by the committee to honor he and the others who had so boldly gone where no man had gone before. He sent this letter, which included the following words: "I should indeed, with peculiar delight, have met and exchanged their congratulations personally with the small band, the remnant of that host of worthies who joined with us on that day in the bold and doubtful election we were to make for our country between submission or the sword, and to have enjoyed with them the consolatory fact that our fellow citizens, after half a century of experience and prosperity, continue to approve the choice we made. May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves and to assume the blessings and security of self-government. That form which we have substituted restores the free right to the unbounded exercise of reason and freedom of opinion. All eyes are opened, or opening, to the rights of man. The general spread of the light of science is already laid open to every view, the palpable truth that the mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs, nor a favored few booted and spurred, ready to ride them legitimately by the grace of God. These are grounds of hope for others. On the eve of the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson was in his home at Monticello, struggling to stay alive for one more day. Some 500 miles away in Quincy, Massachusetts, John Adams also lay dying. Adams passed away early on the day of the 4th, his last words reflecting the thoughts of an old friend. Thomas Jefferson still survives. Shortly after midnight, Jefferson awoke and asked his granddaughter, who stood at his bedside, "Is it the 4th?" She said that it was, and then perhaps he smiled. In one of the most remarkable coincidences in history, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, the two great architects of the Declaration of Independence, died within hours of each other on July 4th, 1826, 50 years after they gave birth to this great land of liberty. Richmond, Virginia, March 23rd, 1775. A 39-year-old lawyer with hair as red as the Virginia clay, Patrick Henry, today stepped across the irrevocable line of rebellion. "We must fight. I repeat it, we must fight. An appeal to arms and to the God of hosts is all that is left us. They tell us that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and when a guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusion phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? We are not weak if we make proper use of the means which the God of nature hath placed in our power. Millions of people, armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, and who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat but into submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable, and let it come. I repeat it, sir, let it come. It is in vain to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death."
Listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispicos, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than 2 of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.